Hi everyone, my name is Miran Branyesh. I'm a program manager for the core user experience team on Windows 8. For the past couple of hours, you guys have heard deep dives into specific UX areas. For the last presentation of the day, this last hour, what I wanted to do was take a step back and take all these concepts you've heard about and really tie them together into an app example. And so we'll be going over how to take a website, in this case, and turn it into a Metro-style app. And so the things I want to talk about today include taking all the traits of a great Metro-style app that you've heard about and walking through an example of how to think about that as you're designing an actual app. And so we'll walk through design iterations of this fictional app and see how you as a designer or developer would have to think about all the things you've learned about today and apply them in a real world case. And we'll also learn specifically about how to take common website design patterns and translate them into Metro design style. And we'll talk about some of the common mistakes you may encounter when you first learn Metro design style. I encourage you, for those in the audience or watching online, to think about your favorite website as well and how you could do it yourself in terms of converting it into a Metro-style app as I talk through some of these concepts. So the app or the website in question that we'll talk about today is this Contoso food truck website. And basically, it's your typical food truck or food website where you go and you visit and you read about reviews of different food trucks you may want to eat at for lunch, or you may read a blog or thing or reviews about various food trucks in your area. And so what we'll talk about is how to take this, which is uses a pretty standard web layout, two-column layout with a header and a footer, and take that and make it into a Metro-style app. You'll notice that in this Metro-style app, there's a lot less Chrome, there's a lot more content, and the affordances for touch are very clearly visible, and it's very much tailored to the kinds of devices we expect to see for Windows 8. So the first step when we think about how to take this kind of website and turn it into Metro-style app is really about embracing the Windows Metro design style. And what that really means is emphasizing some of the Metro principles, so making clean and clear designs, establishing a clear hierarchy of content, using typography in the grid, and all the things you've heard about today. And so that's really about emphasizing content over the Chrome that kind of encumbers a typical website, and also embracing some of the navigation and commanding concepts that we have in Windows 8 that are slightly different than what you would encounter on a typical website. So let's look at the website example again. We can see that there's a title bar, so it has a search box, it has the logo, it has some social plugins where you can log into Facebook or Twitter, it has a sign-in option. There's a navigation where you can navigate to various elements of the site. There's the actual featured content. There's like main content, which is subcategories of food trucks like barbecue trucks and taco trucks and things like that. There's a footer with similar navigation elements to the top, but they're more secondary navigation. And then there's a side panel with other content. In this case, there's ads, there's blogs, a newsletter, there's sign-up forms. So when we think about this kind of layout, when we say content over Chrome, it's really about emphasizing this actual food truck content, which, if you look at it, makes up only three-quarters of, or even two-thirds of the actual website. The rest is all navigational Chrome, like branding, sign-in, things like that. And so this is what we really want to focus on when we're starting to build the Metro-style app. And so when we look at now the finished example of the app, you can see that there's definitely branding. There's an app logo. And then there's the same content that you would see near the site, but presented differently. But what you'll notice is that the Chrome, for the most part, is gone. And what you're left with is all the content that your user really is visiting your site for. So in terms of how we got there, it's actually really interesting to see some of the design iterations that led to building the site. The first version of the landing page really focused on this idea that you as a person really wanted to see food trucks around you, which was, for the most part, a really good starting point. But at the same time, you can notice kind of a couple of issues with that. So one is that while the map is useful, it takes up the majority of the screen real estate. And the actual content that you care about is like tucked to the side of the screen. The other thing you'll notice is that we're automatically here sorting by distance, and we're assuming that you care about trucks based on distance. So if you're interested in categories of food, or you're interested in featured trucks and things like that, it's not really surfaced here. And there's still a lot of Chrome here, Chrome elements that kind of detract from the overall content, which is the actual food trucks. So the V2 landing page tries to eliminate a lot of that. What we've gone to is a tile-based layout, removing the map and featuring trucks and then featuring categories. What you'll see, though, is that a lot of the trucks are now buried in secondary levels of navigation, because to get to, for example, Asian food cart or food trucks, you would have to click on the Asian tile, and then you would be listed all the trucks. And we also have additional Chrome, such as the More button, that is unnecessary. So the final landing page is a little bit different. It still has that tile-based layout, but you can see that the actual trucks are now surfaced right to the top. So even the categories, such as you can see off to the side, if you pan, you see the Asian subcategory. And if you pan further, you'll see other subcategories of food trucks. And all the food trucks are kind of surfaced right on the hub view. And that just emphasizes that content again and flattens out the hierarchy a little bit. Same thing for when you actually click on a food truck. This was the first iteration of our design. And you can see there was a lot of content here that we surfaced, which was really good. However, there was Chrome elements, for example, these tab menus that were not very metro and buried additional information underneath them. And as well, we kind of had vertical panning in the review and horizontal panning in the actual page, which kind of conflicted with some of our guidance that we talked about earlier around touch. So the new version, the final version, retained a lot of that same design. But for example, the menu, which is now on the right-hand side, is now not buried. And it's very clear what the menu is for the food truck, rather than having to go to a tab, clicking on it, and then seeing the menu pop up. Similarly, now reviews, we surface the top reviews or the most relevant reviews. And then the rest of the reviews can be accessed by clicking on the review tab instead of panning vertically inside this horizontal panning surface. The next thing I want to talk about is how to position commands in the app by using the app bar. So in this example, which is photos related to a certain food truck, you can see there's a bunch of Chrome that is irrelevant to the application. So the first one is the breadcrumbs, which show you where you are in your navigational hierarchy. In metro style design, we tend to not emphasize that kind of navigational paradigm. And in terms of other Chrome elements, you'll see that there is commanding within the actual page. So in this example, we're reusing one of the tiles to indicate a command, which is uploading photos. The simple way to fix this is to take that out and basically put it inside an app bar. And so that element is hidden until a user wishes to upload a photo, and then they can just easily swipe from the bottom and get the same kind of command, and it doesn't clutter up the user experience. I spoke a little bit about flattening out the navigation hierarchy earlier with this example, where a lot of the food truck content was actually buried under these categories. And so if you look at the after, when you pan to the right, you see that we've taken out all the categories and surfaced them directly on the hub view, and really use that horizontal panning to allow a person to easily navigate all the categories and easily see food truck examples directly on the hub view without having to bury themselves deep into a navigational hierarchy. Now, the thing with that is that obviously the panning surface has to be very large. And so what we have, and what we talked about earlier in the day, is the idea of semantic zoom, where you pinch to zoom out, and then you can easily go to the end of the pannable surface or any place in between. And so you're maintaining a very easily reachable kind of experience while surfacing content that's relevant right on the hub page. And so it's a much better experience overall. In this example, there's not a lot of metadata that's presented here. It's basically a list, but you can imagine doing various things with semantic zoom, as we talked about before, such as displaying the number of trucks in the area or the closest Asian truck to you or things like that. The other thing that's very important for MetroStyle apps is to think about how you're going to leverage contracts. So there's a number of contracts, and we talked about those earlier. The ones I want to focus on today are search, share, and settings, which I would say form the primary contracts for an app developer to think about. So let's look at the website example. In the website, search is always on the screen, even when it's not needed. So it has to be an element that's right on the page. The other thing to think about that's really interesting and unique to Windows is that any website you visit, in order to search that website, for the most part, you have to visit the website. With the search contract in Windows, you can actually search the app without having to launch the app first. So you can be anywhere in the OS and decide that, oh, hey, I want to look up a food truck because I was on Twitter and someone mentioned it. You don't have to open up the food truck app. You simply swipe from the right or use your mouse, and you can invoke the search contract on the food truck app and bring that content directly into view. So let's see how to do that. So click on the search contract. We look for barbecue trucks, and we tap on Contoso food trucks. And then we're presented with the results, and we can easily click on one of the trucks and see them. Similarly, I can actually be in the start screen and do the same command just as easily. Let's talk about sharing now. So on a website, you have a bunch of essentially sharing buttons. And the sharing options are limited by what you as a developer offer to the users. So if you think, for example, Twitter and Facebook are the most relevant things, those are the only buttons you may put on there. But some of your users may want to share via email or Google Plus or any other social network, but they won't be able to unless you provide those affordances. The other thing is the sharing buttons kind of clutter up your view, and they're spread out all over the site. With the share contract, you as a developer simply allow sharing to happen from your app, and then me as the user can share to anything that I've installed on my system that supports the sharing contract. So if I want to share a truck out to a very obscure a social network that I'm a part of, I can do it easily without any additional work from you as the developer. And so here I'm sharing to Twitter. The other thing that I wanted to briefly talk about is the settings contract. So in the settings contract, it basically allows you to take all those settings and things like that that may be buried on the website or take up space on a nap bar if you were to put it there, and put it into a standard way where your users will know that if I want to look up settings for this app, all I have to do is swipe from the right, click the settings charm, and then I'm taken to settings. I wanted to talk about one common mistake that we've seen app developers do that I wanted you to be wary of, and that's putting a lot of settings on the first level of the settings charm pane. The idea of settings is that the first level of the settings charm pane provides an overview of all the settings in the app. You shouldn't be putting a lot of detail in this view. Instead, what you do is something like this, where if I swipe from the right and go to settings, I can see different settings related to the app. So account, about, notifications, permissions, rate, and review. And then I click on one of them, for example, account, and then I'm taken into a much more rich and relevant view. So in this example, we're providing Windows Live ID to sign in. And unlike a website where the sign-in options are directly on the website itself, in this case, we put all these options in the settings pane, and so they're out of view until they're needed. The other thing that you should consider when you're making a Metro-style app is obviously the form factors that you're going to be working with. Windows 8 supports a wide array of form factors, from small tablets to large all-in-ones, with portrait and landscape orientations, as well as multitasking. And so you as a developer really have to think about these orientations if you want to cover the majority of your users. The most obvious view is the full view, which is just your app as it is when it's invoked and nothing else is around it. However, there is a snapped view, which we talked about earlier, where your app can sit side by side with other applications. And this is really great for multitasking scenarios where, for example, I may be doing one thing, like going on Twitter, looking up, seeing where a food cart is, and then I may also look up the review of the food cart using your food truck app. Supporting the snap view also means that you're going to get a lot more exposure and a lot more screen time from your users, because it won't necessarily be that your app is used in the full view all the time. If it supports the snap view, sometimes users may use it while they're doing other tasks, and you're still getting that exposure. And so it's really important to support the snap view. In this case, you can see that you can pan inside the snap view and get more information about this particular food truck. So the other thing I want to talk about is making sure that when you do support the snap view, you also maintain context for the filled view. So if you think about, for example, a flow where, as I was saying, you were on Twitter and you were having a craving for barbecue ribs from a certain food truck, you tweet about it and you have your snap view, which shows the barbecue truck that you care about, and then you actually want to find more information. What the user would do would simply be to unsnap your app and fill it and keep the Twitter app snapped. And so as the key here is that you maintain the same context that the user had before, and don't, when you're unsnapping, take the user somewhere else. The thing to think about, again, is that when we're talking about the range of form factors that you have to support, for a website, you generally have to scale to all sorts of devices, because your website is accessible to various form factors. So you have to scale to phones, tablets, laptops, large screens. For Windows 8, all you have to do is think about the different orientations and screen sizes that you have to scale to. And as we talked about earlier, there are a lot of affordances for you as a developer to do that very easily without a lot of trouble. The next thing I want to talk about is being fast and fluid with touch. So You've heard about a lot of the touch first interactions earlier today, and I just wanted to go over a couple as they relate to this specific case study. So one of the things to notice, of course, is that on a website, the main interaction paradigm for scrolling or for moving content is scrolling. So you would use your mouse and you would scroll vertically, and more content would fill in from the bottom and come to the top. When we think about the most common case for metro-style apps, it's actually horizontal panning. So you use your slate or widescreen laptop and you pan horizontally with your finger or a trackpad, and really the content is ordered in such a way to really allow that to shine rather than any sort of vertical panning paradigm. I wanted to talk a little bit about semantic zoom in more detail. I spoke about it earlier and what you could do in terms of enabling easy navigation from one end of a very long pannable surface to the other. Here, for example, in this V1 of the semantic zoom view, the issue was that even though this was a great zoom view showing some of the categories, when you zoomed out, you still needed to pan further. And so that was one of the main issues. The other issue was that people put a back button, which is a standard navigational element in a lot of the metro-style pages, on a semantic zoom view. The way you enter and exit semantic zoom is purely through touch or through a scrolling gesture rather than through a back button. So it's not really a page per se, it's more of a pinch out and pinch in view. And so putting a back button there is a confusing kind of paradigm for your users. So the way to fix that is simply remove the back button and then make sure that all the pieces or all the areas that you can navigate to on that page are visible in the one semantic zoom view. That way it prevents your users from having to zoom out, then pan again, and then get to the content they want. You should be able to zoom out and quickly get to the various areas of your page without having to pan further. I quickly wanted to touch on the cross-sliding gesture, which is one of the other gestures we have in the system. In this case, by using the file picker, which is one of the contracts we have available, you can select multiple photos using cross-slide gestures and then incorporate them into your app. Similarly, you can support the cross-slide gesture in your app directly if you have a need for it. In this particular case study, there was no need to support the cross-slide gesture for food trucks because there wasn't really commands you could do on the food trucks themselves. But in a lot of apps, such as photo viewing apps or things like that, you may have a need to support this gesture, and it's a pretty intuitive gesture compared to tap and hold and or putting commands on the app bar, things like that. One of the last things I want to talk about today is about staying connected and alive. So you've heard in detail about all the do's and don'ts of toasts and tile notifications, but I wanted to talk a little bit about how you would incorporate those into your app. So on a website, the way you would disseminate information is really through more of a polling method. People would come to your site, they look for news or blog updates and things like that, and that's how they would get information. A lot of that is general and not really tailored to an individual user's needs. In a metro-style app, the first surface where you can really kind of push notifications out to people is through live tiles. So in this example, you can see that if a food truck that you care about, that you may have pinned to your start menu, has moved, you can easily get updates on that without having to actually visit the app or like check the website or anything like that. Similarly, the actual app itself could also do that in a bigger live tile. If there's a particular truck that you care about that's really, really important, you can also enable toast notifications. So if you're in some other app, such as the weather app, and you know that you really, really want to visit the Nom Nom barbecue truck, you can enable toast notifications and then get updates the minute that that truck arrives in your area, which is something that a website has no real ability to do on its own. Of course, if you do enable that, you should enable a way in your settings page to turn those kinds of notifications off, because we want to make sure that the user is in control of all these notifications and isn't swamped when there's lots of apps that enable them. The final thing I wanted to talk about a little bit more was branding. So as a developer, branding is a very important piece, obviously, in app design. And I just wanted to highlight some of the surfaces that you have available to you today in terms of branding, while still maintaining some of that Metro-style design language. So the first and most obvious surface is when your app is launched, you'll see a splash screen. And that splash screen can have your logo, your branding, and your colors really shine through. Similarly, the tiles on the start screen can also be branded with your fonts, your logos, your colors, and things like that. I want to really emphasize that when, as far as Metro-style design goes, you have your choices in terms of the fonts you use, the colors you use, the logos, and the personality of your app without violating a lot of these Metro design style guidelines. Feel free to use the fonts that resonate with your brand. Feel free to use the colors that resonate with your brand. But just be cognizant that when you do that, you want to maintain a type ramp that's consistent, use the grid, spread things out, and use typographic layouts and things like that. So you still maintain that Metro feel, but you also retain that richness of your brand. And we want to make sure that that doesn't get lost in any of the apps you build, because it's very important. So that's basically it for me. Are there any online questions, James?
Still got some questions from the last session. So if you could ask people online if they want to submit questions on Twitter or any email account, you can do that.
Sure. So if you have any questions about any of the content I just presented, you can submit it on Twitter or online on our website, and I'd be happy to answer them.